Session number 16723, George Lambert, Reel 9.
Lambert, Reel 9. Can you recall your feeling when you were told the war finished in front of Hanover or wherever you were?
Great relief. When we moved into Berlin, one of the first things after we'd been sort of settled down, you know, we were in some barracks or other, and I can't tell you the name of them now, but when we looked out the window the next morning and saw the German people, civilians, scrounging through the waste bins, whatnot, classed that as a marvellous sight at that particular time. Nothing else more than they deserved. But, and then of course...
What was Berlin like?
Devastated, The only way I can describe that was, as I said once before, is that if I ever find a building that hasn't been hit, I'll take a photograph of it. Consequently, I've got no photographs. It was just one massive demolition. We were in some barracks. I can't remember the name of them. They weren't too bad. Then, of course, there was the question of the Russians and the French and the Americans wandering around at different parts. And one of the most awkward things, I think, was that you're wandering around or walking around and a Russian soldier would salute you. You couldn't salute back because you had no rank, and it was hard. Well, you just nodded your head and said thanks sort of thing, but... even in them times, the Russians, I didn't realise, because not being a worldwide man, but the Russians were still on the barter system. Shall we say a gold watch or a reasonable watch would bring a cow in Russia. And they were still on that system, and we didn't realise. It was a little while before you tumbled to why they wanted these things.
So they were bartering from you?
They would barter off anybody. The Brandenburg Gate was the barter point for black market and things like that. But they would do it. But the Russians was... I didn't have the gumption to think in those days that countries didn't have money, as they say now, that they were still on the barter system. I didn't do it, but Russia was doing it.
Did you get involved in the black market situation?
No.
But the bartering situation with the civilians?
Everybody was in it,
What was the medium of exchange in bartering? It wouldn't be money.
It was money. It was watches and whatever it is, gold or, there was money going, changing hands, hoard the money. The mark wasn't worth a penny, you flooded it.
Did the civilians try to make contact with you?
Yeah, well, in my case, I got very friendly with a family sort of thing, mother and daughter. And that was through, after we'd been there a little while, I got involved with playing tennis, because that was one of me past doings, and close by there were some tennis courts, and they were still functioning, made to function, of course. And there was a German there called Apple, and he apparently was a pro in days gone by, and I accepted him, and I played tennis, and we sort of used him, and he was training. Quite a few of us doing the same thing. When we met some of these German. One was a mother that used to come down with a daughter. And the reason why she came down was because During the occupation, the early occupation of Berlin with the Russians, when they were doing this, the young girl used to go down a manhole in the bottom of the garden, and the manhole cover was lifted up so she could get air in, because the Russians were going around raping everybody, and the daughter was kept, spent quite a bit of the daylight hours for the first few days down the manhole. And we got very friendly on Nemsko. And she wasn't a bad little tennis player, like, you know, doing and that. And I just kept on, and that's where I spent a lot of my time, in Berlin.
Did they feel protected if they got friendly with a British soldier? Or?
Well, got a bit more, I think they knew they were a bit more civil and a bit more humanitarian than they're doing. Because mine, after all, we never suffered what Russia suffered. Doing. So, I mean, there's a reason for the Russians. So, more so than what we were as soldiers, not as civilians at home getting bombed, with as soldiers.
Did the Russians in the city, did you get much chance to contact them other than this bartering situation?
Well, not really. I didn't. There was things went on. For instance, they had once it got stabilised a little bit, they opened a theatre out, and which was rather unique to us in the sense that there was a film, which you couldn't understand, of course, and a cabaret show. So you had the film, then it stopped and the lights went on, and coffee was served, or something similar, you know, doing, and you had like a refreshment there, they're doing, you know, someone was doing, then for a quarter of an hour or so, and then there was the cabaret. And I thought, well, that was something that never ever happened in any of our picture houses, you know, doing. And nobody was allowed to smoke in the building then. That was the ruling then.
And was that when just in the British sector? Or?
In the British sector, yeah. Doing.
Did you get Russians coming to it?
Oh, well, yeah. Monty got the bright idea of, putting the Nuffy right on the borderline of the British sector and the Russians, like, you know, doing this. And it was open to the Russians a half an hour before us. So consequently, by the time we got there, there was nothing left. But as I say, I was playing tennis and doing my own thing. Then, after a while, after being there a good while, they decided to have the Berlin Olympic Stadium, which is a marvellous thing. I walked into there, and one of the things that I couldn't have done it, was the catalogue of the Berlin Olympic Games of 1937. There was hundreds of them lying about in immaculate condition. And I've always thought, since I come home, why didn't I bring one home? Then I realised I couldn't have carried one that were that thick, you know, don't. But it would have been a wonderful souvenir. But what happened was, they decided to have an Olympics for the British and American, French and Russian soldiers, just as a get-together. And I was representing the British soldiers in the way of the 100 and the 200 yards, and we did a bit of training in there one way or another, and had a run around. And just shortly before the day of the races and whatnot, the Russians decided to pull out. So it was just competed against the Americans and the French and us. And once again, the Americans stole a march on us. They had transferred athletes from Frankfurt, anywhere else they could, bring them in for the day, run against it, and then off they went back and transferred them back to their own regiment again. That actually did happen. They brought personnel in perfectly just to run in the Olympics, just so they could do it. But it was all supposed to be just a friendly thing for the Berlin personnel that was doing the duty there.
But so they'd win then, in effect.
Then we know that there was lads brought in from Frankfurt, transferred in, just to participate in this, and then they were transferred back again. And that was typically the Americans. But it was quite an event. I really enjoyed it.
Were there any other sports going on between the nations?
No, don't. Now, as I say, I was eventually moved from there down to a place called Una.
Before we move there, you said you were in barracks. Were the good barracks, good accommodation?
Well, we had to make our own. We're just like a shell for us, like, you know, just make up what we had, you know, doing.
Didn't get involved in any of the protection of the, or guarding of the war criminals?
You mean Hess? No. He was in Spandau. Some of the boys, the company lads went up, I think, and participated in that, not the right word.
The civilians, as you say, they must have been living in quite difficult situations.
Yeah.
Food and that, how were they getting? I know you've said that they were in the bins and so forth, but was food being brought into them to help them to get through the?
Well, they were doing the same. They'd scrounge off us, you know, as they're doing, and of course they were on the barter system as well. And of course, there was women doing a hell of a lot of the cleaning up, you know, because there wasn't very many of the men left, as I say, and the women having to do all the cleaning up. And me being in the building trade for a long time, you know, my interest was always in there, was that they had some prefabs things, huts that they were putting up for accommodation that they'd organised. And one of the things I noticed then was the hinges on the doors were made of plastic. I mean,
Again, what was the attitude of the Berliners? I mean, they were in effect a defeated race. Were they again trying to excuse what had happened to you?
Oh, well, it's always the same, you know. They just wanted to be friends, you know, as far as when the British sector. I think a lot of them would think, well, they were fortunate to be in the British sector rather than be anywhere else, you know. I never went into any of the other sectors. I never went any farther doing something.
Was it a situation where young girls became prostitutes to make an existence, to live?
Well, yeah, that's the only way they could make something out of it, you know, doing
was that course. Becoming a problem with venereal disease, etc.? Was that a problem with the battalion?
Yes. It was didn't matter where you went, it was always a problem. The most recollection that is backing down in Una again, you know.
We'll come to Una, yeah.
We went down. I was moved into Una.
Any idea what time of the year this would be, going to Una?
Well, I was demobbed in February, so I should imagine it was around about December time, or maybe January time, because I wasn't there all that long. And I knew it was going to be demobbed from there, you know. I knew that's when, once I moved, come into Blighty, it was to get demobbed, because there was a ruling that if you came out on air release, I think it was air release, you had to start work with the original company you left after 3 weeks. If you came out on B release, you had 3 months. And I thought, well, better to have 3 months pay and try and find out what I wanted and get myself sorted out. So I came out on B release, for that particular reason. I thought, well, I'll give myself some time, and I'm not going to be told what to do. I've been told what to do for long. I'm going to try and make me do it. So I came out on B release. And
what is Una like? Is it a large town? Or
Una, no, it's a middle-sized town, I think, doing. And yeah, it was. As a matter of fact, the sergeant's mess to decorate it all up. We had some Hungarian waiters doing it, and they looked after us all the time. And to brighten the place up, I've got photographs, but I know they're in the house somewhere there. I had life-size models of girls painted on the walls. Page three sort of thing, but they were fully dressed, the ones. But Di Jones fitted them because he was a poster painter. And some of the boys had the names of the fiancés or the wives put underneath them, you know, doing this. And doing that. They had them in the sergeant's mess, painted on. Then you would be in the. Sergeant Greer was the MT, not the MT sergeant, the ND sergeant, sort of the medical doings. And you'd be sitting and having a drink or having your dinner or something. Somebody would come and shout, could they see me? It's Joe in, Joe Greer. Right. Will you ask him if so and so's name's on the list? I've met her, like, you know, doing it. And I wanted to make sure she's not on the list up at the hospital, like, you know, doing it.
Was this the VD ones?
The VD,
that
yeah.
Listed in some way.
Yeah. Doing. There was a list of them, the hospital, of the girls that was being treated. And they used to come and, is you in? See if that, ask me if that name's on the list, man.
Did you come across any refugees that were, which was rather a difficult problem at that time, wasn't it? People being released from camps and prisons and so on. Did you see any refugees? Did you come in contact with any?
Never involved with any referees, as I say. When we were moving up into Berlin, we came across that Polish camp and doings, and saw that doings. Of course, there's refugees all over open doings, but when you're down in Una, you say the war drifted so far past it, come back down to Una, which is just south of Cologne, they'll begin to build themselves or organise themselves a little bit better.
Where were you accommodated there? Were you in Una, where were you accommodated?
Just in houses.
And were these empty houses?
Yeah, just doing. I think one of the amazing things, I was coming on holiday. I think it's either coming on holiday or coming down to Una. But I came down by train, you know, on a train. We had to cross the Rhine on the train. And it was barely bridged, sort of thing. And you got on the train, got onto the bridge. And you looked out the window, and you couldn't see the railway lines. And when you looked back, it was all shaped just like a snake, and you were travelling across it, and it was just going up and down, down. It was funniest feeling in your life when you look out the window. Down, right there. Then back home.
Were the Germans begin to recover a little bit by the time you were leaving? Would things begin to happen? Organisation.
I would say, yeah.
There was no problems with the Germans, did you have at all?
Norwegian, no, that they had to accept the fact that they were defeated, you know, doing this and the suppose. But I might be one of the odd ones out. Life's got to go on, the world's got to go on, but there'll always be that little stigma with me. I lost a lot of good friends, though.
So you came to Demob. How did that come about?
I came back into England, and I went into York, I think it was, doings. And when I came to get Demob, they didn't have anything to fit me. And there again, Luke was riding with us. They gave us me hat and shoes and shirt and what have you, but they couldn't give us a suit. They hadn't one to fit me. So they gave me a ticket, and I had to take it to the local tailors at home and get a suit made. So I didn't wander around with a blue with a grey stripe in it or anything like that. I had a nice grey suit made up. And I had to wait 3 weeks for it being made. So when I was back home, even I was wandering around with all my regalia on and my uniform. And that's how I come to be tied up with the council at Chesley Street when I came back, because I still had all my stuff up.
Helped you get the job.
That's helped me, yeah. But,
Was it a smooth process, the demobilisation?
Oh, yes, no problem. Once you got everything in your hand and your piece of paper and whatnot, you just got on the train and went home.
How Had you medical before you left?
No.
And you said you were wounded, but of course...
I'm being quite honest. It hasn't affected me, but I feel annoyed that in this day and age that people are getting pensions for something that they're claiming for after about 40-odd years, you know? And there's one particular instance where there's a chap not living very far from me. He's on pension. He's got a pension for deafness. You can hear a pin drop, but that's beside the point. I said, well, where did you get that for? He says, firing both us. I said, well, where were you firing both us? He says, in Germany. I said, well, you didn't go into 1948. So there you are. So that's the way of the world. He's posted into Germany, and he's supposed to be fighting both of us, and he's got a pension for that, and he was never in the war.
So you were demobbed at York, you said?
Hmm. I think it was York. I think.
Did you? You said that you had 3 months, I think it was a B release.
Mm-hmm.
And you were paid for that 3 months, your army pay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some kind of a lump sum given to you at the end of the war?
Nothing to tell, no. Once that was finished, that was it. I was just on notification to say that I was on Z reserve until the age of 45. And without a word of a lie, I've never had anything to say that I'm being taken off it yet. I should have had, but I haven't.
Did you find it difficult settling down in civilian life after the time you'd spent all over the world in effect?
Yeah, doing it.
How did that come? What form did that take?
Well, one of the things as far as home life was concerned, when I came home and had to live with Ida's mother, and a charming person, and doing... I accepted her as my own mother, even though my own mother was still alive. I accepted, and I was just treated like her son, you know, doing so. Then we lived together for about 2 years before she died. But
settling into civilian life almost overnight, kind of thing, was that difficult to do?
Well, you're going out now and again and having a drink or two and. Going through one or two stories with different ones, you know, doing. After a while, the thing was to try and forget all about it and get back. As I say, I'm not being big-headed or anything. All I wanted to do was get back to civilian life and get back to me what I was doing. Because I can basically, honestly say, I've never drawn a penny dole in my life. I've never drawn any sickness in my life. And I've never lost a day's work in my life. And that's as true as I'm sitting here.
And you started your job with Chesley Street Urban District Council?
Yeah.
And that was in the bricklaying trade?
I went back in my own trade, doings. As I say, I saw a Mr. Curry, which he said I had to go down and see the clerk of the council, Mr. Ridley. And when I went in, had an interview with him. And as I say, I was all dressed up doing this. And I would say in basics, he was saying, thanks for what you've done. You can start work for us anytime you like. Any word from Mr. Curry will do for me. But, you know, doing this, you can start work for us anytime. And that's how I come to start work at local council.
How did you settle into civilian bosses after army bosses?
You mean it?
Was there any...
Back home, you mean?
Yes, when you got back home, back into your job, was there any problems with
the... Not really, because, you know, there was, as far as Chester Council was concerned, in this particular, when I say doings, on the site there was only one boss, and that was Mr. Curry. And he was a real stickler. He learnt me a hell of a lot. He learnt me a lot of tricks of the trade doings. There's one thing that had nothing to do with the army, but doings. But he always preached into me, George, if you want to do a job, you've got a job to do, and it's running behind time, And you want, He says, never put another man on. He says, take a man off. Because he says, if you put another man on, you've changed the conversation. You've got more to talk about. He says, take one away. He says, the sick of each other's company, they'll get on and get the job done. And that's always stayed with me. And it's a good philosophy.
And you've kept your interest up with the regiment through the association?
Well, I dropped out for a long time, years and years. And I have to say the odd lad in Newcastle, because I come to work in Newcastle quite a lot. And I used to see the odd lad. And I got involved with unions and things and one to another. But so everything went by the board, and it wasn't until I've only been back in the association now, I think. I would think no more than about 7 or 8 years. That's when I joined the association. I had been away from it. I just used to see a lot of the lads now and again.
Do you get to the reunions when they're on?
Sorry?
Do you go to the various reunions?
Well, I've been going through to Durham for the doings, and they organise things with other doings, but I just go on a Sunday morning, have a natter with the DLI lads and some of the other ones, and then whatever, if I say anything for Durham and doings, I try and fall in with that. I don't go down to Winchester or Colchester or any of them. I don't do any of those doings.
Looking back over your army experiences, what are the most pleasurable memories you've got? If that is the right word after thinking in terms of war.
Well, the only answer I can ask about doings, I know it's a funny thing to say, but the army never did me any harm. Because discipline never did anybody any harm, I had lots of pleasant, when we weren't involved in anything, and doings. For instance, even before I went across into Normandy, we had some marvellous nights out having a drink together, you know, doings. Causing trouble, of course. He was very friendly with a lad called Corporal Campbell, who was ex-searchlights, and would been out drinking, and he'd wanted action, so he asked for it to be transferred to an infantry, and he came, went to one of the companies, and I met him in the Naffy one time, and we got very friendly, and yeah, we'd been out for a drink this night in Shirley, and we were making our way back into the forest place where we were staying, and we walking past along the road past this field, and he let's have some fun. And he just stood and he just gave out a few orders. And there was the searchlights belting away up into the sky and one thing, and then we could hear somebody shouting, "Who the bloody hell's doing that? And we had to run like hell." Doing it.
He was ordering the searchlights.
I give all the orders off and the searchlights with the gun up and let's get over here.
So it's the comradeship.
Yes, I don't. Just good fun. And incidentally, he got killed. He got killed when he went over to Normandy.
Worst moments? Any really bad moments? What were you?
Well, as I said before, when we crossed the Weser, you had that feeling that you're going into his front door when you're coming back. But I think basically, I might be one of the fortunate ones of doing the full circle, and I suppose there was a bit of guidance from above, because I was fortunate to have me friends the whole 6.5 years of most of doing, basically.
Did you have any feelings of religion and help from religion during the war?
Well, yes, in a sense that when it was coming to dealing with bereavement, one thing and another, I was always alongside the padre, doing that.